Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Happy Wednesday. I want to wait just a couple of minutes here to make sure that everyone joins before we get started.
Hi everyone, this is Craig.
Hello, Craig.
Hi, Craig.
Hi.
Okay, so I think we can get started here. So let me start sharing my screen. Okay, so can everyone see my screen?
I can see.
Okay, great. Okay, so welcome everyone to the Sprint 101 showcase. We will have the Team Ona showcase first, then Team Parrot. Then following will be Team GSI, and finishing up will be Mind the Gap. During this sprint, Team Ona focused on autoload NiFi flows, Kafka topics, and database scheme at Docker and Ansible startup. They finished 11 story points this sprint. Team Parrot focused on continuing improving CI, and they finished 36 story points this sprint. Team JSI focused on the R&R product lists and starting the convert to order feature. They finished 9 story points this sprint. And then Team Mind the Gap finished the user management profile page and started work on opt-out and writing tickets. And they finished 18 story points this sprint. Overall, there were 4 bugs that were fixed this sprint across a few teams. And I wanted to give a quick overview of how we're doing with bugs so far since the 3.3 release. And We have actually fixed 16 bugs since the 3.3 release in April, with a total of 29 new bugs created since the release. And I thought it would be nice to show a little bug trending of how we've been doing creating new bugs versus resolving bugs. And so far, so good. Let's see how we're doing with the test coverage. Looks like all tests passed. Does anyone have any comments that they want to make about our test coverage or the test stats that I have just shared?
This is Brandon. I'll just chime in. The bug trending chart here at the bottom right, does that still mean, though, we aren't treading water? We're, you know, like 26 issues were created, but we solved six of them, meaning like our total backlog of bugs is bigger than it was a month ago or so. Is that right?
Well, what is actually, that's a good question. What actually is missing from this bug trending report is the bugs that were marked as dead. So we have fewer bugs than after the 3.3 release, but I haven't put together the report for that yet. But that's great to point out.
Cool. Yeah.
Okay, if there aren't any other questions about testing, Mary Jo, are you on?
Yep.
Okay. Can you give an update on the translations?
Yep, absolutely. So in this last sprint, we actually created a new service or a new project. And so we have about 17 messages. Sorry, it wasn't a new service, just a new project. And we have about 17 messages that need to be translated. And I think we haven't actually finished the translations from last sprint, so we're a little bit behind, but we did create new messages.
Okay, thank you. Now we should get started. We will start with Team Ona this time. So, Craig, yep, go ahead.
All right, hi everyone. Please let me know that you're able to both hear me and see my screen.
Yes.
Is the volume fine?
Yep, we can hear you.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, so this sprint we focused on loading, I guess doing some research tasks around auto-loading information into NiFi, into a Postgres database, and into Kafka. So there are three tickets related to that. And we had originally planned to be able to Dockerize Superset and Kafka, but we did not get to the Dockerization of Superset. So we're going to have to shift that over to the next sprint. So I'm going to group the issues that were done. And looks like I have a chat. Oh, okay. Mary Jo has added an issue for outlining translations. So to group these, the business value here, and to orient everyone, is OpenLMIS is going to have the microservices running, and the reporting stack uses NiFi as the system that extracts data out of those APIs and posts it into a data storage system. So the research tasks here have been focusing on figuring out how we can get NiFi to streamline that process so that it's very easy for a developer, for example, to stand up the reporting stack. And the components of Kafka, you know, creating topics, were also addressed. So the first one that I wanted to go over is around template storage on GitHub. We did a research spike on the business process for storing templates from NiFi. And a NiFi template is basically an export of the existing flows that you already have set up. So in the research task here was to have templates exported from a developer's machine. That export would be downloaded to the appropriate GitHub repository. And then that export would be committed to GitHub. So we've got a GitHub repository for NiFi. And then once it's committed to GitHub, another developer would then be able to check out those templates and work on them. This research spike defined that process, and we also looked for some other alternatives. That is a multi-step manual process, and it requires every developer, as they drag and drop or change a NiFi flow in their local dev machine, once they get it to where they think it should be functioning, they then need to perform a couple of manual steps to export those templates and then commit them to GitHub. We came up with an alternative approach that we need to discuss likely at the next technical committee. And that would be around having the OpenLMIS core community host the NiFi registry. NiFi registry is a service. It's a software application that you run in the cloud where developers are able to automatically commit changes and version control NiFi flows. So in the NiFi registry service, you connect your local development environment or even the production environment to the NiFi registry that would be hosted by OpenLMIS. And then you basically check out a flow from the NiFi registry. It'll download those templates into your local development environment. It automatically tracks whether or not you've made a change to that flow. And once you've made a change, you can right-click on that flow and you can commit it to the NiFi registry with a new version. So this looks like a good alternative that I guess we can continue to discuss over the coming sprint. The next two items that were worked on were around adding Kafka reporting to the Docker Compose file. So Peter committed this, and it was just merged. Now, if you go into GitHub, you're able to. Let me see if I've got it here. You go into the reporting folder, and you run Docker Compose up, and it'll stand up NiFi. It'll stand up the Postgres database for the reporting storage solution. It'll stand up Zookeeper, and it'll stand up Kafka. As I mentioned, we didn't get to Superset in this sprint. There was another, I guess there are two more research items. Antonate, and she's not able to be on the call. She's got another commitment. She researched and tested a mechanism for version controlling and auto-loading Kafka topics. As we worked through this process, she looked into getting a GitHub, creating a GitHub repository. But what she ultimately realized, she and Peter realized, is that you're able to add a configuration variable where you can create topics on the fly in Kafka. And so by setting this value to true, we can actually perform the version controlling within NiFi flows. So instead of having a separate GitHub repository for creating Kafka topics and version controlling those, we will set this topic creation to true in Kafka, and then we will set the we will version control the NiFi flows that create those topics. So kind of offloading the version controlling from multiple systems into one. We're doing a similar thing, or we're planning to do a similar thing with auto-loading Postgres schema. So the reporting engine will have a database schema in the Postgres database. And in this event, in this ticket, we analyzed a couple of different approaches along with the self data database process and the Druid process. And we realized and concluded that it's best for us to create these schema generation files in NiFi. We can do that in a couple of ways, either through creating kind of DDL SQL scripts. We can also, there's a processor to actually set up tables. And so we decided that we would use that schema generation in NiFi through version controlled templates as well. So as you'll see, NiFi is becoming it's a great tool. And as we progress down this path, we realize that it's both excellent at setting up services for the first run experience and activating those services kind of on an ongoing basis. The final one here was around setting up Kafka and Dockerization. Again, these two, and I didn't know, maybe I could get your advice offline, Sam. This ticket was part of the other ones, and we researched, this ticket captures the research that was done, but we didn't actually have to create a GitHub repository for it. And I think I've added the comments here. No, I haven't, but I will. So we will not need a GitHub repository. Kafka is Dockerized. We're using the original image from that's provided by Confluent. And so we don't need to add it to Docker Hub. It is already Dockerized for us. And the GitHub repository, by adding it to the OpenLMS ref distro, we don't need to create an independent GitHub repository to manage Kafka topics. So that summarizes all of our the tickets that we did this week. I want to note that over the next week, we have two developers that will kind of the next sprint. We have two developers, Antony and Janet, who will ramp down on the self plus project and shift over to the gap project. So we expect that our velocity will increase in the second half of the next sprint. Does anyone have any questions about these the work that was done?
No, it's great to see it. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, this is great. I'll comment just as we're changing. I think as we do more and more of this tooling and stuff, hopefully the tickets that are coming up for you as you do more pieces of it will be having us put the spin up of these services into the OpenLMS Jenkins so that ultimately, I hope one of our ultimate goals is that the reporting tool is out there published and running, the live latest version of it always, along with the other OpenLMS components that are all on our demo environment and our test environment and all of that, so that the reporting stack is live up to the minute, as the system changes, just the code is pushed to demo and test, that the so are the reporting tools. But I'm sure that's somewhere in the kind of future work stream, and it's exciting we're getting a lot of this tooling infrastructure. Thanks.
Yeah, that's the target for the 3.4 release, to have all that completed. I wanted to mention, for those who are downloading and hard to reach places. The NiFi image is 1.2 gigs from Docker, and the ZooKeeper image is 600 megabytes, and the Kafka image is 600 megabytes. So it's about a 2.4 gig download to run these services locally.
Wow. Thanks for the warning. Yeah.
Yeah.
And are we putting, do we have that information documented anywhere? Because it seems like an important thing to be monitoring for the entire service. Just curious if we have that info anywhere.
I've not documented. I mean, also the each microservice, I mean, the total Docker image size for the OpenLMIS core is about 1.7 gigs on my local machine. So is that information somewhere that I can add to?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Perhaps it'd be a useful topic to figure out where we want to put that. I can ask Josh, but at least with the onboarding document, we should have it at least in there, but ideally somewhere else. I don't think I've seen it before.
Yep, I don't think I've seen it, so that's a good one to flag.
It's something that should get done.
Yeah, so it's about a 4 gig download.
Yeah.
Just to get everything running.
Good thing for us to be monitoring, because it would, yep. I'll flag that for us to do somewhere. Thanks.
Okay, and I've also taken note of it too, but that's okay. A great call out. Okay, thanks, Craig. Sebastian, are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Okay, and I should be sharing my screen now, so just let me know if you can see it.
You can see it, yeah.
Okay, and before I start, I just wanted to briefly introduce a new person on the Soul Develop team. So Jana has joined us yesterday, and she's currently in the process of onboarding. And we are hoping that she will start supporting the Mind the Gap team with testing, probably this week, late this week, or early next week.
Hello to everyone.
Hello and welcome. That means we'll have two Joannas on the team. So I believe you are Joanna S. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. It's me.
Okay. All right. Well, welcome to the team.
Well, it's probably going to be a little confusing at the beginning, but let's hope we can work it out. Okay, and to the actual showcase, I want to talk about one ticket today, which is requisition properties can be overwritten if it's saved concurrently. And just to give a little of background to this ticket, this is something that the Malawi implementation has discovered. And it's essentially about a possibility of having concurrent requests override the requisition state, even its status. So the approach to solving those concurrency issues has been extensively discussed on the mailing list in this topic named concurrency issues. What I want to say about this is that we agreed to tackle this issue by implementing two new features. One of them is having the optimistic locking on the database level for the requisition object. And this first part has already been implemented in those two sub-tickets here. And I have introduced optimistic locking for the requisition resource and the include if match header with requisition put requests that Claudia has worked on and implemented on the UI side. The second part of this ticket is introducing idempotent requests. And this will be used for calls that create or update the status of the requisition. So for initiating, submitting, authorizing, and so on. And that second part has been discussed on the mailing list as well. We have agreed on the approach, and we'll be starting a work on that part as well. So I can actually showcase this first part today, which, well, a lot of this is really happening on the backend, but I can show you what is exposed in the request and how it works. How it works in the backend. So the first change that can be noticed is that we are now using e-tags, and the e-tag for the requisition contains the version that is managed by Hibernate. So each time that we update the requisition in the database, Hibernate will raise the number, the version of the requisition. Let me just. Get this requisition so we can take a look at the response headers. And we are seeing this e-tag response header that's saying that this requisition has version number one. Now, if we save this requisition, so sync with server, this is sending another request to the backend, saving this requisition, and the version should update. So now this e-tag is saying that it's in version two. Also with the update requests, we are now supporting an optional if match header that you can see here. So in case we provide the if match header with the save requisition request, we will validate on the backend that there is that the version match. So what we are sending here from the UI from the client, and what we currently have in the database, those two versions need to be the same in order for the request to succeed. And this is validated in two ways. So we are validating it manually. And this is also validated by Hibernate itself. At the moment of committing the transaction into the database. So even if we make two concurrent requests, like nearly at the same time, and we are sending the same versions, and those two versions pass the manual validation on the backend, Hibernate won't allow saving those two requests because one of those transactions will commit first, and the second won't be allowed to commit with the previous version. So that's how we have approached this. This also means that we are no longer validating the requisitions using the last modified date timestamp. This has been removed because we are now using the versions managed by Hibernate and versions that we are sending with this if match header. And we can also take a look what happens if I try to save a requisition with a previous version. So to do that, I have opened a second tab with, and I'm accessing the same requisition. So what I'm going to do is to make some update here, save the requisition to change its version. And now on this tab, I am having a previous version. So I will attempt to save it, and I'm getting an error about this requisition having a newer version. The UI is automatically fetching the latest version, and I'm having this change here that I have made on the previous tab. Yeah, and that's basically the first part of this ticket, and as I mentioned, during the next thing, we'll be working on the second part, which is idempotent requests. Okay, are there any questions about this?
This is great, and this should this solve the production issues in the Malawi implementation?
Yeah, that's right. The main problem really on the Malawi implementation was that we were doing those checks manually only. Now the version of the requisition is validated by Hibernate at the time of the commit, and this will ultimately solve the issue for Malawi. So there is like no chance at this point that we will ever be able to save the requisition with the same version twice.
Awesome, thanks.
Yeah, this is great and look forward to getting it finished and testing out our patch release process. So for folks to know, this bug will be the first candidate for doing a patch release for Malawi.
Okay, there are no more questions. I will stop sharing my screen and probably let Jakub continue.
Yeah, I can continue. Can you see my screen?
Yep.
Okay, so the first ticket I had was about big bug list report. The problem here was that it displayed a separate line, even if there was no lot defined. So I merged those lines, and here's how it looks now. Yeah, and the other ticket I have is migrate from Bower to Yarn. And initially this ticket was about migrating to NPM, but we decided to go with Yarn because it was easier to use with our existing grant tasks. And also there were some problems with NPM. We couldn't fetch Google Analytics with it. So when you go to an UI repo now, you'll notice that we have this package yarn JSON, and we have all the dependencies there. And we, when developing UI components, we now use yarn task instead of Bower. Yes, so that's basically it. Do you have any questions?
Okay, so if there are no questions, I can be next.
Okay.
Cool, thanks.
Okay, so can you see my screen? Assume, yeah. Okay, thanks. So in this sprint, I was mostly working on this spike on the feature flag implementation. So to summarize, we just went with the simplest way to implement those features flags, which is actually only allow to set the feature flag on the deployment. So as a example of those feature flags on the UI and on the backend side, I did two things. Firstly, let me just show you that on the UAT, on the approve screen, there is no button to view all the requisitions. So the first thing I did is made feature flag about disabling, about enabling the batch approve screen, which is by default disabled. And I've just set I just enabled the batch approved screen on the test server. So let me just show you. Yeah, so as you can see, there is a button with also there are those checkboxes which actually indicate that the approved screen is is enabled. And for the backend part, I will show you the next ticket, which is the filtering bug, which is a simple bug. But, I will just first show that there is some documentation done for this ticket and I've just started a discussion on the mailing group. So if there is, you have some questions, some ideas how to improve maybe in this feature flag implementation, you can just leave a comment in this review or on the dev forum. And I will be presenting this on the technical committee meeting. So yeah, so maybe let's just jump to the ticket that was about fixing the facility search endpoint, which actually broke the administration screen. As I said in this ticket, the related ticket, this change actually will break the convert to order screen. So this is a good example of a short-living feature flag, which should be removed after fixing the tech debt on the convert to order screen. So the same thing as the previous feature flag, it is disabled. It is disabled on the UAT and it is working on the test server. So let me just go to the facilities and let me just filter it maybe first by some combo. So yeah, so basically on the UAT you will see that if I type the name here, the result will be the same. So this is working correctly and let me just jump to the UAT. And yeah, and as you can see, the results are different. So on the UAT, the flag is disabled. And to set those flags, you just simply add an environment variable. So very simple setup. So are there any questions to those feature flags?
So you said that you're going to be presenting this on the technical committee to make sure that everyone understands the parameters of when to use the feature flags and how to implement it.
Yeah, exactly. How to implement it. I will show the code a little bit more because we are kind of, this would take probably some time. So okay. I'm presenting it there. And yeah. Maybe some comments will appear, and maybe some follow-up ticket to improve this functionality. Yeah, so the last one is about the stock card range summary endpoint, and this was actually shown on the last showcase. I will just say that the thing that was fixed in this sprint was actually counting the stockout days. So if you use this endpoint, the stockout days is actually now calculating correctly. So this is everything from me. So yeah, I will just stop sharing and pass the ball to Claudia.
Hey, can you see my screen?
Yes, we can see it.
Okay, so in this sprint, I worked basically on improving CI. And first thing what I've done was updating contribution documentation. And as a scope of this ticket, I add some information about branches, pull requests, code reviews, sonar analysis to our contribution documentation. And it's here. Next one is about adding build, test, and sonar badges to GitHub pull requests. And as a scope of this ticket, I also update our pipeline build to be triggered by with GitHub webhooks. Yeah, and currently our configuration looks like this. There's no periodical scanning. But we have here my credentials, and we have a follow-up ticket to check if there is any solution to get rid of my credentials here. Oh, okay, and I can also show you that we have these checks visible on GitHub for pull requests. And also just for commits. And here is a redirect to Jenkins build.
Okay, so can you say a little more about what the check, when it has the green check, which set of tests is that saying is passed? This is really cool, by the way.
Build, test, and sonar analysis.
Okay, great.
Contract tests.
So basically the whole regular pipeline build, right?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Okay. And the last one is about tag builds saved when releasing. And I've added keep logs configuration to our Jenkins files. And if the build has a release version, then it should be automatically checked as keep forever. Next one is about cleaning the code to get rid of document duplication in facility admin on UI. And when I worked on this ticket, I also found an issue with saving facilities with existing code, because we have a model and with some facility details, and we click save button, and then next model was open with supported programs, but still we don't have we don't send any requests to save that facility. When we select some program and click save programs, then we have sent the request, and it fails. But we cannot do anything because our cancel button do the same thing. So I fix it. And now we saved, we are saving a facility right after first save, first click. Maybe some duplicated facility code, and okay.
I have the outdated UID.
Also, maybe I will show you how it works previously. Okay. And the same. So user cannot do anything. And now click save, and we have an error. Okay. Yeah, and I believe that's it. Do you have any questions?
Claudia, on that last example where you showed the error, I just want to make sure I got it. The difference was that after you got the error, you could go back to this modal and fix your data?
Yeah. And I can click cancel, and I can do what I want. In the previous solution, I can do anything. I have to remove the URL to get out of the modal.
Okay, right. Cool.
Okay.
That's okay, was that all for Team Parrot then?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. Ashraf, I think we're ready to move on to Team JSI.
Yeah, this is Ashraf. So in this sprint, we did not had enough of our team members who were able to work on it, because Mohammed, he is on vacation, and it is only Elias and Teklu that was able to work in this sprint. So we can start with Elias first.
Okay, thank you. Do you see my screen now?
Yeah, we see it.
Okay. In this sprint, I have worked on two areas. One was with completing some of the work with the ability to add additional products on the requisition form. That is OLMIS 4684. Previously, we had demonstrated a partial set of functionalities there, but there were a few feedbacks that we received and those were incorporated in this sprint. One of the feedback that we received was to make the search feature case insensitive. So for example, if I searched with C112, it should be able to filter by the code field, but this time around, even if I typed in the lowercase and the code is in uppercase, it would work. The same is with the name. So this makes it much more easier for users to search for the products that they want. And this is also consistent with what has been done in the other UIs in the search that was implemented in other screens. Another feedback that we received about this functionality was one missing feature here to show the number of skipped line items so that the users will be alerted and that there are a few line items that are already skipped so that they don't think this is the only product that they would be able to complete in this RNR. So this section here would allow them to see how many line items were skipped, and it would also update as we either add or skip line items that were previously on the RNR. So this is one of the functionalities that I worked on. Another functionality that I worked on was around the convert requisitions to order screen. So here, one of the stories was on view order screen, ability to filter by order status. This is also something that's implemented, but it's on a code review status. So to be able to see this, you would be able to go to view order screen. Just a moment. So here, in case the users are looking for any order that has failed to transfer or in any status that they wanted to check, we've added one new filter. The filter is in this filter box. Just like the other filters, you would now start to see the status filter. Here, you'd be able to select any status that you wanted to search for. And if I clicked on filter, it would be able to show me only those orders that are in that status. This is also a usability improvement. Another feature that I worked on was an ability to retry FTP when the order failed to transmit. To demonstrate this, I'm going to use my local environment because I was able to stop the OLMIS ref distro FTP container. This first order has failed to transfer. So you would start seeing this new button here to refresh or to retry the transfer of this specific order. This is only visible for users that have appropriate role. So on roles, what we've used is if you go to the fulfillment role, there is a right called transfer orders. This is an existing right. And if this role has this transfer orders right, and the user has that right, when they come to this screen, and if there is any order that has failed transfer only on those rows, you would start seeing the retry button. And if I clicked on retry, it's going to attempt to redo the upload. It may succeed, it may not succeed, but at least it would just make an attempt and it would display an appropriate message based on whether the attempt was successful or not. And if I started the container that I stopped for this test purpose, And if I did retry again, now this time around, the order has transferred successfully and the status is updated. That new button we saw to retry the transfer is also gone. So this was one other story that I worked on. Another story that I worked on was with releasing a requisition without converting it to order. This is still in progress, but at least I'll be able to show you how that is working. This is the convert to order screen. And if a user has a convert to order right, they're going to start seeing release without order button along with convert to order button. The reason why we needed this is because of the experience we had with some of the implementation. Sometimes the facilities will not be reporting on time, and let's say they had some kind of staff leaving and they were not able to maintain an appropriate report, timely report for a few months. And once they brought their new staff up to speed and they are able to use the system, they usually ask them to enter backdated requisitions, but those requisitions may not be converted to order. What we observed was that this screen starts getting longer and longer, and over time, orders that based on different scenarios, like a facility raised an emergency order, but then before it was fulfilled, they raised their regular requisition, and this screen starts getting longer and longer. After a few months of implementation, the users were forced to navigate through orders that they no longer want to convert, requisitions that they no longer want to convert to order. And for that reason, we needed a functionality where it allows the users to choose not to release the for the users to release the requisition, but not converting it to order. So in this case, I'll be able to select those requisitions that are not supposed to be converted to order and click on release without order button. It shows me a confirmation dialog box. If I clicked on OK, it would be able to remove that specific requisition without creating a corresponding order for it. And if I go to view screen, view requisition screen, I think I should be able to see for Kanko, you would see that some of the orders can be released without order and the status would show up as that too. So the users would be clearly seeing that they this requisition does not have a corresponding order here. These are the stories that I worked on. If you have any questions, I welcome them.
So if there's no question for Elias, we can move on to Adunia. Adunia was also facing some blocker this morning. I think he's going to explain it, but he will try to like showcase the ticket that might work from his own environment, but he's going to explain the issue that he was facing. Adunia, are you able
to see my screen?
Yes, I believe this is your screen. Yes, we can see it.
So one of the tickets that I have been working on this sprint was 4815, the facility assignment configuration error. The ticket was, this is the report, the facility missing configurations. So the ticket requested that.
Are you showing something, Adunia? We see a screen, but that says, I'm not really sure.
You can't see? All right. Let me check.
Have you displayed your screen and what we are supposed to see on the screen? Could you describe so that we can confirm what we see?
Okay.
Yes, now we can see a PDF report, a Chrome browser with the PDF report showing facility missing configurations.
All right, okay. So okay. I was working on, this ticket 48.15.5. So it was related with the facility assignment configuration reports. So this report is about for any facility requires at least three roles, usually with three roles that are mentioned on the ticket, which are program supervisor, store manager, and store room manager. So if the facility doesn't have those roles for the users, the facility entry will come to this report. That means there is an assignment error on the roles. So on the ticket, it says that even if for the we can edit a user, we can assign a user for
If you go,
we can assign
lower,
users.
If you go a bit lower so that we're able to follow you along, Adonia.
What is it?
I mean, the screen was moving too fast for us to follow. So I was saying that, you know, try to go a bit slower.
Yeah. So I was trying to show you the demo from my local version, but while I'm at file, I'm updating the players, it just failed. So I will just tell you how to reproduce the ticket, and it's already fixed, but I'll tell you how it, to reproduce a problem and how to fix it. So, for the tickets, Asher, you can tell me if this movie. So, for we can assign a user, for example, for this district, for this facility, we can assign a user and we can provide three roles for the user. And at that time, the facility will disappear from this report. It shouldn't have to be visible. But I said that it was, even if the facility users role was assigned, those three roles, store manager, and program supervisor, it used to come with this report. But on my fix, that's not coming anymore. So that was a ticket. That was the issue for this ticket. So if these three supervisor, program supervisor, store manager, and store manager roles are assigned, the facility won't come to this report anymore. So this was the fix for this issue. But I can't show you because my container was down. While I'm trying to pull a new container, it just went down and I wasn't able to up the container. So that's why I'm showing you this just from the UAT. So the second one is fixing these null values on the reports. That's also fixed for both columns that you can see. That's for the second ticket for 3289. Okay, that's what I've been doing with sprints. Is there any question for
Robbie? The audio wasn't that good either. I think you were a bit faint, so I'm not really sure whether, at least I, whether I was able to follow it along, but let's see whether others had any questions. And when you explained that, you know, what are the blocker that you faced this morning, well, that it was for when you pulled the list, like your container wasn't initializing. Could you explain it one more time so that like all of us understand what was the issue you faced this morning?
Yeah, to reproduce a problem, I have to change the role is the whole facility of...
Now you're again very faint. Could you speak up a bit more?
Okay, can you hear me, right?
Yeah, I think it's better now.
Much better, okay. So to reproduce a problem, first, I have to edit a user's home facility, and I have to assign to one of the facilities that is coming on this report. After that, I have to update the user its role to the three roles that I've mentioned before, store manager, and program supervisor. But in the meantime, we are trying to lose that. Even if the account is administrator, I was able to update a user for some reason. So I just tried to pull a new distro from the repository in such a time. So it just went down and I wasn't able to initialize the container. That was a problem. But to report this even on the test environment, an administrator was not able to change a role and facility for the user. I think it should be changed in the meantime. I just faced this problem just this morning.
Okay, so if we understood you correctly, you were saying then as an administrator, you would have been supposed to be changing the role, but for some unexplained reason, it did not allow you to change the role. But if it had allowed you, then the report fix that you had done should have worked. So yeah. You are planning to find out what has went wrong and, seek out any help from the community. But otherwise, you think that the report issue, that was the actual, bug, so that it displays the value instead of the null that was fixed. Only the blocker issue is that as an admin, you are not able to change the role to be able to demonstrate this issue. Is that correct description?
Yeah, yes, Ashraf.
Okay. Yeah. So you can, post a message on the Slack and then, describe your problem and then hopefully you're going to get a response about, the problem you faced.
All right. Okay. I'll do that.
So there are two tickets you have worked on and you tried to show both of them, right?
Yeah. Those are the two tickets I worked on.
Okay.
Right.
So, internet connection wasn't that good and the audio was also very faint. So I'm not really sure whether you, all of us were able to follow along, but if there is any questions, please feel free to ask that. If not, then Sam, over to you.
Okay. Thank you, Team GSI. Now we'll move on to Team Mind the Gap. Nikodem or Lukasz, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure, I can go first. Let me share my screen first. Can you see it?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, so as a start, I will show which ticket I've been working on this sprint. So the first one is 38, which was about adding a confirmation model. Actually, it was more like a informational model that would show after a user changes his or her password. To showcase this, I will go to the page. I should probably have it open already. Yeah, I have it right here. I will refresh, and I most likely will be locked off. I did my work. So, to showcase this, I will simply send a reset password. And as you can see, I've received a new model has been shown, saying that we will now be logged out of the system. When we click the logout, I can't click anywhere else. It would basically do nothing. So when I do the logout, I'm brought back to the login screen and I need to relog with the new password with the new password. So that's it if it comes to this ticket.
The next one was about displaying rights on the user profile screen. To showcase this, I will also go to the admin profile as it is an user that has a lot of rights, so we can showcase it really, really nice. So as you can see, a new popover has been added to the role header, saying that if we hover over any of the roles, we will be shown a list of rights that are part of this role. So as you can see, I can hover over the delivery approver, and I can see that I can manage proofs of delivery. As the district store manager, I can view requisition and approve them. And that's pretty much it. If it comes to the ticket, I can also, I have also added the same functionality on the user edit page. So as you can see, now on this screen, we are also showing the rights. And that's it if it comes to this ticket. And the last one was a bug about the inability to create a second period for a processing schedule that already have a period added. So as you can see, now it is possible. I need to scroll up a bit as the start date is in the next year, so I can click it, I can add some name, and click on the add. And as you can see, the new processing period is added at the end of the list. For this ticket, I have also reworked how the date picker works, as it was way easier than actually hot fixing it for the previous implementation. So all the date pickers have been updated with the new syntax. And that's basically it for this one. And the last.
Sorry to interrupt. Just quick to ask about the date picker piece. Which ticket did you do that work under?
It was for the bug. So it was basically done with the, I don't remember the number at the moment. Let me just find it real quick. So it will be 3813.
Okay, thank you. 4813? Okay, thanks.
Yeah, we also had a ticket for reworking it, but it wasn't added to the sprint. And I believe it was marked as dead by now. So yeah, it was basically easier to rework the date picker and make it work the way it should from the beginning than doing some weird fixes to solve the problem. And the last thing I was working on, and I'm still working on, was creating the user contact details class and adding an endpoint for it, but that ticket is still in QA, so I won't be showcasing it at this showcase. I will do that on the next one. So are there any questions about any of the tickets? Okay, so I will stop sharing my screen and I will pass the ball to Łukasz.
Okay. Okay. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay. So in this sprint, I mainly work on the new functionality, email verification, and I will show maybe the happy part. So basically, now when user try to edit an email address from the current one to the new one. Okay. update. The mail address is not unchanged, but it's like in the wait process. The user has to click the link in the mail that was sent to the new email address to verify that the user has accessed the email address. Between email password email address change and mail verification, the user will retrieve all notification on the old email address. And you can see the message that was sent to the user. And now if we execute this link, I get the notification that the email address has been verified. And now when I refresh the screen, I see that the new email address is set and I should get all notifications for this email address, and the checkbox is set as mail was verified successfully. Okay. Also, as for the ticket, if because of any problem, issue in the network, user don't receive a verification mail, he or she has ability to resend the mail. I quickly modify the email address and I update it. And now user has an option to send another verification mail if the previous one was not received by the user. Yep. Okay.
Just to clarify that, if you didn't change the email address, that button would still be there, correct, to the resend? Or do you have to give a new, because you just changed the email address to be able to resend the verification email, is that correct?
So you mean if I understand correctly, if user verifies mail, the button is hidden, the same should be when my address is not changed.
No, I'm not saying it needs to be hidden. I'm trying to clarify. I just want to understand if I put the email in and I don't receive the email for a network reason, and you said I can resend it.
Yep.
I saw that you actually changed the email address. So if I don't want to change the email address and I want it to stay the same, can I still send the verification email again?
Yeah. In this case, I changed the email address because the old one was already verified, and that's why the button was not visible. So
okay.
Yeah.
So if it didn't get verified, I could just hit the button again and it would send again?
Yeah, the button can be clicked and many times. Of course, the old token is invalid and the new one is created and sent to the user.
Thanks for clarifying.
No problem. Okay, the next ticket was mainly caused by the verification feature. Basically, because the feature is in the AUF service and the email address currently is in the reference data service. So I have to modify the way how we create and update user details, that the request goes through the AUF service all the time. So the AUF service can check if the email address has been changed, basically. Yeah. So from the user UI side, nothing was changed. From the backend, all requests has to be sent from the AUF to the AUF endpoint, not to the reference data endpoint. Okay, and another ticket was simply add the information below the password input on the change password model to inform what password is required and what kind of password is valid for the system. The next ticket was about removing code duplication in the UI code. Here, similar from the UI perspective, no changes was done. Everything should work as it worked before my changes. And the last one was about fixing the failed failing performance test. The issue was that the previous step. Okay. I was out from the Zoom, but I think you still hear me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Now we just lost the screen, I think.
Okay. Okay, but the last ticket was only about fixing the broken test, and the issue was that one of the steps returned incorrect data. I fixed it, and now, from what I know, all performance data in the requisition works fine. Okay. And that's everything from me. I don't know why, but I can't connect to the Zoom. There's no questions. I...
Okay. Thanks, Akash. Chongsun, is there anything that you would like to showcase?
No, I don't have anything to showcase.
Okay. I believe everyone has showcased their tickets today. Are there any other questions or any comments before we end?
Yeah, I have. Sorry. Was someone else can go? I can go next. Who is?
Yeah, this was Chris. Opet. I was wondering about the period names. Usually, when you say Jan 2017, Feb 2017, the raw data is you need to do a lot of gymnastics to get it analyzed. Sorting is difficult. Is it possible to change the format? Because it's a very key variable in identifying records. Is it possible to put year and then probably dash and a numeric month? Is that a possibility or it brings a lot of rework?
So, the actual demo data that's in there right now was populated by us, like saying this is just it. Every implementation can name their period in its own format. Or are you referring to not what you're visually seeing on the UI? Like a different data element. So the UI, like what you were seeing when you saw those periods, is user defined.
Okay.
So if you have a different naming convention for the periods, you are allowed to use that convention.
Fantastic.
And if I got something wrong, anyone may correct me here, but it's a good question. And I just wanted to reflect that everyone across the teams, one thing I just wanted to make sure that it was understood that during showcase, if there's something you don't understand that a team maybe that member that's not on your team is showcasing, it is appropriate and okay for you to ask a question for clarification or try to understand what the other team members are showcasing. I just want to make sure that every team knows that this showcase is all about everyone understanding what was completed and you are able to ask questions of the team members that aren't on your immediate team. I just wanted to make sure that we all walk away kind of understanding what was accomplished by the other team members. So very, very exciting. And lastly, before we end, and I'll hand it back to you, Sam, unless there's someone with other questions, I wanted to note that You might have noticed there's a new name on the participant list. Wes Brown has joined, I see, prior to, we've just hired Wes, and he'll be joining July 9th. So there'll be more information coming and introductions to everyone. It's exciting to see that he logged in and watched the showcase before he's officially joined the team, but we're really excited to welcome him to him in the team. He'll be the new senior technical manager, and he'll be based in Nairobi, Kenya, and we'll be working on the community for developers work stream that Brandon was leading previously. So we're really excited to have him join.
Thanks, Mary. Hello, everybody.
Welcome aboard, Wes. Great to have you.
Thanks. So happy to be here.
Great. Welcome, Wes. And with that, that is the end of our showcase today.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Have a nice rest of
the day. Everyone.
Bye-bye. Everyone.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.